right, guys, you're in tune to another It's Going Down podcast. Today we have a very special interview with participants from Central PA, that's Pennsylvania, anti-fascists, also known as Antifa. We're going to be covering a lot of ground today. This was one of my favorite so far interviews, and I really enjoyed the talk with the two participants today. We talked about a lot of stuff. They're in a state that's extremely white, very blue-collar, very rural, very white working class. And this fits right into our subject at hand that we're talking about over the next couple podcasts of organizing within the white working class against white supremacy towards a class war political line. We talked about guns. We talked about gun culture. We talked about coming up in an area where there are white supremacists that are very violent and taking action and people wanting to come together to do something about that and not only build a force that can counter white supremacy and fascism, but moreover, build something within both the white working class, but reach out to other communities of color that are working class as well, and building up something completely different that can become a war machine to destroy the current social order and systems of oppression. So this is a great interview. I hope you like it. If you want to hear more, go to itsgoingdown.org. Check us out on Twitter at @IGD_news. Find us on Facebook, It's Going Down. But moreover, please give us a donation. Help us keep going. Help us sustain this work. Help us continue to put out original writings and recordings every day. We bring it to you across North America. So please, if you like what you hear, go on to It's Going Down. Hit the donate button. Sign up to donate monthly and help us sustain this continuing work. All right, thanks for tuning in again. We have with us two participants in Central PA, that's Pennsylvania, anti-fascists or Antifa. We're going to be talking to them today about their group, about what's going down in their neck of the woods out there in Pennsylvania. Also, we're going to be talking beyond their group and what kind of organizing and stuff is going out their way. We're going to be talking about an upcoming action on November 5th in the capital of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg. The National Socialist Movement, it looks like a couple other white power groups are coming out there to hold a demonstration on the capital. And anti-fascist groups across the East Coast and beyond are mobilizing to shut them down. So why don't we get started with you all? We have two people here joining us. Can you all just talk about how the group got started and why?
Groups like Keystone United, or formerly known as KSS, Keystone State Skinheads, have organized along with other white supremacist groups in central Pennsylvania for quite a while, at least in my experience, since the mid-90s, with pretty much almost no resistance whatsoever. So we found ourselves today, in today's world, especially like with Trump and, you know, the immigration questions and things like that, we've really found ourselves in a situation where an anti-fascist response is needed now more than ever. We're highly outnumbered here, and somebody had to do something, so we decided, why couldn't it be us?
A core group of us had discussed, and were friends with one another, and had discussed anti-fascist responses generally to the questions of things like the Keystone State Skinheads, the Maryland Skinheads, you know, all of these highly organized white supremacist groups that are, we're right smack dab in the middle of them. So we had kind of loosely talked broadly about anti-fascist actions, but we realized that if we waited around for everybody in one town to be on the same page, we were going to be waiting forever. So we decided to kind of form a loosely connected coalition of small groups of anti-fascists who could come together on a regular basis and work together to plan a response, finally an appropriate response to the huge amount of white supremacists and even the closet racists in this area.
Well, let's back up a bit. Let's really talk about the Keystone State Skinheads, because they're kind of this new, well, I wouldn't call them new breed at all, because like you said, they've been around for a while, but they've really tried to kind of push beyond their image of just, you know, kind of like hammer skins or people that get drunk, and maybe one of them will go to jail for beating up an interracial couple, you know, every 5 years or something like that. But they've actually really tried to step out and actually, like, try to, like, organize and hold protests and stuff in my mind, like, they're much more dangerous because they are kind of the muscle in a lot of these other groups, like Traditionalist Worker Party. So can we talk a little bit about Keystone and just, like, who they are, where did they come from, what's their whole deal, for those that don't know?
Well, Keystone really grew out of the rise of white nationalism in the early 90s. And I remember when I was in high school in the late 90s, it was nothing to have three or four Sharpie skinheads and three or four Nazi skinheads at any punk show you went to. And this is in small towns in Pennsylvania. This isn't even just in larger cities like Harrisburg and Philly. You'd go to a show at a fire hall in the middle of nowhere, and there'd be 10 skinheads in the parking lot beating each other up. So this has been a long-standing, you know, 25, 30 years of these people being friends, committing crimes together, terrorizing people together, having barbecues. You know, they're very tightly knit. They're very well organized. They have a hierarchical structure. And then in the mid-2000s, they realized that nobody really liked skinheads all that much. I know it took them a while to figure it out, but once they realized it, they decided they wanted to rebrand themselves. So the founders of KSS, Steve Smith and Bob Goss, put suits on and went on local news programs and tried to talk about the new brand of white nationalism, which is what we're seeing Trump talk about now, where we talk about preservation of values and making sure that white culture is not threatened by multiculturalism. That really grew out of KSS trying to rebrand themselves as KU. They saw an opportunity with the Trad Youth Party when it was growing down in Maryland. The Maryland State Skinheads are another prime example of that core group of angry, shaved-headed idiots growing up and realizing that they couldn't be so openly violent anymore and finding new ways to integrate their racism into everyday life.
It's just rebranding of an old flavor, but also in Harrisburg specifically, there's been two meetings, large meetings that we know of in this past year between Keystone United, or KSS, however you choose to refer to them, with the Traditional Workers Party. So their next, as far as we know, their game plan here in PA is to start running candidates for local government. And Steve Smith, one of the co-founders of Keystone United, he's already an elected official. I forget what county.
He's a Republican Party committee man in his county.
And he just got reelected for his second term. So, like, they're not playing games. Like, they're going away from so much of, like, you know, like she was saying.
Chasing people down the street and fighting other punks in parking lots. They're really going for the jugular now.
Mm-hmm. They're organizing politically now. And so that, and with the recent Syrian immigrant issues going on around here, it really stirred the pot, and the FASH kind of, like, exposed themselves, and we decided there needed to be resistance to it in this area, because they've had carte blanche in this area for 30 years.
As soon as we organized, we started hearing from other groups all over the state saying, hey, there's only two or three of us out here, but it's really scary. Is there some way that we could meet up with you guys and maybe talk about having some kind of an exchange of ideas and support? So we've really found that the need was there. The need was there, and people didn't feel like they were big enough, and, you know, just in their town. So I think we've really provided them with the opportunity to work within a larger network of people and to have a larger group with which to build a resistance.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about how you all built that in a second, but I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about KSS and this person, Smith, that got elected. I mean, has there been any pushback against this person because of their views? I mean, because it sounds like these are pretty out in the open people, and I remember reading on One People's Project about him. He's like, it's like a really kind of minuscule position, right? It's like water control.
Yeah. Essentially, it's a party position. I don't believe that he actually makes decisions, like, on even on a municipal level as far as sitting on any kind of a council. But a Republican committee man, I think, essentially functions as a party functionary for the Republican Party. And a lot of times these officials are elected, but they're elected because they run unopposed, because it doesn't get you any glory, it doesn't get you any money. It's basically just a functionary position. So I think that they've started down way at the bottom, And I think they're going to practice, you know, their campaign tactics, and I think they're going to practice their politics and their glad-handing, and then I definitely see them trying to move up. Matthew Heimbach has that as a central platform of the Trad Worker Party.
And he's been there twice now.
Political. And he's met with the Keystone State skinheads twice in the last 12 months.
At the same building of the November 5th event, actually.
Yes, he's met with them at the State Museum, which is on the Capitol grounds. So this is something that the state has chosen themselves to ignore. And that's another reason why we feel that a strong anti-fascist presence is necessary right now, because the state is making absolutely no attempt to keep these people from influencing politically.
Well, Steve Smith, he may be in a low-level elected position, but he's using it to normalize his views with the citizenry, at least where he lives.
He's been on a question and answer session in 2008 that's very enlightening. You can find it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He goes on a local...
He's been on the news, local news.
He goes on a local, like, morning show and does, like, a taking callers questions thing about how white supremacy isn't really all that scary.
He's trying to paint it as, we don't hate everyone who's not white, we just really love white people.
Yeah.
Like... And people are buying a hook, line, and sinker around here. It's pretty sad.
And in the rural counties, I was actually just reading, the town where I grew up is 97.37% white in a population of 1,300 people. So there is definitely fertile ground for these kinds of ideas to foster, because there's no counter-narrative there.
Yeah, and that's... Sorry, go ahead.
We want to provide a counter-narrative. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's great. I mean, just to go off on a tangent here, I just find it really interesting because, I mean, I grew up in a small town, pretty blue-collar, but it was like half brown, half white. So, I don't know. It's interesting to me that, like, it seems like those ideas are more palatable in an area where, like, people can kind of point to, you know, the fear of Black Lives Matter, maybe in a big city, you know, like an hour away or, you know, whatever it is, you know, Syrian immigrants or, you know, drug cartels at the border or something, and kind of like point to that, and people, you know, mobilize around it because there's this big fear. And, you know, they, I don't know, it's also interesting to me because it's like, I don't know, that it is in a lot of places where it is like just straight, almost all white people.
I also think there's something to be said for the fact that Hispanic immigration has increased in Pennsylvania. Yeah. Pennsylvania has a lot of commercial-sized farms, more than they used to, and a lot of those farms utilize migrant workers now. So we're seeing something in Pennsylvania that probably happened in California 30 or 40 years ago, where you have a very white, very rural population, that suddenly these small towns are getting a very high Hispanic population very suddenly. And it frightens them because people, you know, especially people in the rural conservative areas, are not as amenable to change as people in urban areas. I would say that regardless of political affiliation. And I think that it makes it easier for them to feel like their culture is being threatened when they're faced with such radical change so quickly.
Right. Well, let's jump back to how Central PA Antifa came about. Can you just talk about that process? You said basically it was like these groups have been around for a long time, kind of throwing their weight around, it sounds like, in the punk scene and within local politics. So how did you all come about, and what was the process like of finding all the people that could kind of come together in this loose coalition?
There's a small core group of us, less than a dozen people, that have all been lamenting about this for quite a while. You know, the rise of white supremacy around here, how it's going unopposed. We all, you know, shared our stories of the heyday at the punk scene in the 90s and things, and we could see things getting progressively worse, and we'd always talked like that there should be an Antifa presence here. And it kind of just happened overnight. One day, we all just were like, you know what? Why don't we just become the Antifa presence here? Like, most of us are anarchists. And I don't know. It just happened really organically and kind of quickly. And actually, I'm surprised at how successful the response has been. Like, people, we've networked with affiliate groups all over Northeast PA or Northeast. You know what I'm talking about?
The Northeast, yeah.
Yeah, like it's just spreading. It's spreading much bigger than I expected.
I think a lot of credit can be given to social media too.
Yeah.
We've all been sitting in our houses bitching about this for years, but until we all went on Facebook and started bitching about it, we didn't realize how many people were really mad about it, you know? And people that are within driving distance of us, people that are willing to get out in the streets with us and do something about this. So I really think that being able to recognize people on Facebook, being able to coordinate with them, you know, on Twitter, that kind of thing, I think it's really been very helpful in the acceleration of the formation of our group, because we were really able to get our message out really quickly. We were able to have a really public presence immediately, and that public presence allowed other people in small towns all over Pennsylvania and then all over Maryland. And then, you know, further north now, we have friends in Buffalo that are coming down, friends in Asheville that want to come up. So it's really been incredibly helpful for us to be able to coordinate on social media. That's kind of where we started. You know, a lot of us have been friends for years. A lot of us were friends in real life. But we didn't have the ability to communicate en masse like we have now.
How do you see like the non like quote in the streets aspect of this? Because it seems like anti-fascism is something that we're going to have to keep, you know, really sticking to and really getting better at. But I mean, like, for instance, you brought up kind of being in the punk scene earlier in life. But I mean, do you think that there's kind of like a culture aspect that some of us are missing? Like, we're not organizing like, you know, explicitly like anti-fascist punk shows or hip-hop shows or tours or whatever, and you know less so than I see like happening in places like Europe. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about that.
It's a special kind of culture around here. There's a lot of white working class and white poor around here that don't get it, that I think we can recruit.
Yeah, I think that we do definitely have quite a bit of ideas that kind of surround working through the local culture to really get the message out, you know. I think mm-hmm. that just as easily as white working class people in rural Pennsylvania can be swayed to a white supremacist viewpoint, I really think that they can be swayed to a working class left viewpoint just as easily.
Yeah.
You know, you got to show them who the real enemy is. Because let's be honest, a lot of them don't have the time or the energy to find that out for themselves. They're working 3-4 jobs, raising kids, you know, trying to keep their lives going. So I think if we reach out to them where they already are, it would be a lot more beneficial than trying to create a space for them to come to. So we've talked about doing things like tabling at gun shows. We've talked about doing things like going to farmers markets and flyering. There's a lot of punk rock themed craft shows in the region that we flyer at.
That's awesome.
So there's a lot of kind of networking that we want to do that's really outside of any specific, like, let's throw an Antifa punk show, you know, let's have an Antifa barbecue. We really kind of want to integrate into the lives of people that we feel could benefit from our ideas more than asking them to take time out of their busy and stressful lives to come learn about us.
One thing that's really huge where we live in central Pennsylvania is gun culture. Hunting, like, you know, just gun ownership in general is really huge out here. And it's dominated by working class and the working poor white folk. And they tend to be catered to by, like, the Fox News type bullshit.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, what Chris, as to touch on what Kay was saying, is that, like, I know it might be an uphill battle and a little risky, but to table at these gun shows, because there's gun shows like every weekend out here, mm-hmm. and they're huge events. It's like they're like bring the family type thing. Maybe to give them a different narrative, something else to think about. I don't think that a lot of the working class white people around here are exposed to solidarity type ideas. All they do is get Trump rhetoric and things like that, especially like right now. But I think that's something that we should definitely look at, is to bring more, to bring white allies into the group. These same people that say Blue Lives Matter, I don't know, I think they're speaking out of ignorance mostly around here.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because, you know, myself, I grew up going to gun shows and I was around a lot of gun culture growing up. I went shooting with my family all the time, you know. I still have, you know, firearms myself, legally, of course. But, I mean, I think that's a key question, is like, because it seems like within the white working class, you know, gun culture is like kind of like a cornerstone. And obviously, yep. it can go in like a very right wing kind of like, basically, I have this to defend myself from, you know, the ravages of, you know, the unwashed masses or whatever. And then also in kind of a terrain where it's like, well, you know, this is about self-defense and like, I don't want the state to have the ability to come in here and shoot me without defending myself.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's a key question. Obviously anarchists in the past are, you know, as you said, like working class, you know, leftists or whatever elements have like tabled at gun shows. There's actually a really good interview on LibCom with somebody about tabling at gun shows and their experience with dealing with like hammer skins and the Minutemen and stuff. But yeah, I think like now one of the best things we can do is, for instance, because everybody talks about ISIS, is talk about how anarchists, even in the US, are going over and fighting, in some cases dying, you know, ISIS, and they're fighting with the Kurds who are influenced by, you know, anarchist ideas and kind of carrying out this anarchist revolution. I mean, I think that's what's so weird is like, you know, people right now are being trained to basically like fear Syrian refugees or, you know, Middle Eastern, you know, refugees, and then Mexican immigrants. It's like, you know, two areas where you have like the most anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist revolutions going on, you know,
yeah.
that
yeah.
know what it's like to basically...
That's an interesting correlation. I hadn't thought
yeah.
of that before.
Oh. Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, look at the Zapatistas. Like, they have no love for the Mexican cartels, which are like the big boogeyman of the right. Like, they're the ones standing up and fighting against it. And the people
yep.
that are coming over here to work in the fields, like they're by and large indigenous people that... I don't know, it's just so insane. But I think if people can kind of realize that some of these people are actually picking up the gun and like fighting these battles that they're talking about on the internet, I don't know, maybe some of those walls would come down a little bit.
And also something very very American is Americans tend to respect somebody who's willing to pick up a rifle for their cause. If you know what I mean. So it's I see exactly what you're saying.
I think that the key with the white working class population, I think this is true whether it's an urban white working class or a rural or even suburban white working class, is that at the core of it, I think that white America is very much libertarian minded. And I think that you can use that libertarian idea to kind of shoehorn them more towards leftist ideas, because really libertarianism is all about class consciousness. You know, if you can bring about class consciousness, I think you're really going to see a lot of that anger towards immigrants and migrant workers from all over the world. I think you're really going to find that kind of evaporates when you get them to realize that those people are also working class, and that we're fighting against the same thing here. You know, they're more like you than the white guy in the White House.
Yeah, totally. Has there been any attempts to kind of interact with gun culture there in Pennsylvania presently, or is that something you all are just thinking about?
It's something we're discussing. We are definitely working on it. We haven't really made a firm plan to table at specific gun shows. probably going to have some people flyering at. So we definitely have ideas like that in the works. I think that, you know, we're working class too, so it's tough for us.
Right.
We all have families and jobs and stuff, so it's tough for us to really get out there and make a firm plan for more than two or three of us to show up at any one time, unless it's a huge action like 11-5, where it's definitely like, let's set some time aside for this.
Yeah, you know, one other thing, because you brought up like the Blue Lives Matter thing, and this has been talked about. We've talked about this on It's Going Down. Also, the people in Evansville have been talking about this too. But, you know, if you break down per capita the amount of people that are, or the people that are killed by police in the United States, Native Americans, African Americans, and Latino Americans are killed at a much higher rate than white Americans. But at the same time, because there's a, you know, shit ton of white people in the U.S., you know, half of the people that are killed by police are white Americans. And it's interesting because, I don't know, I feel like that's something that we should be talking about with white people. It's like, look, a shit ton of white people are being killed by the police. And like, you know, and you're running around screaming about how bad these Black Lives Matter people are, but, you know, in some cases, Black Lives Matter groups are the only people that are standing up when a white person is killed by the cops. You know,
yeah.
And I don't know.
They actually are the only people that are doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think, I don't know if you have any other thoughts about kind of how to interact with that reality. I don't know if police shootings are something that you all deal with out there a lot.
Yes.
But, I don't know.
We recently had a person of color who was suffering an episode of mental illness be shot by the cops here in Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
And,
we coordinated with his mother.
Yep, we coordinated with his mother and a local anti-police brutality group. And she actually led a march through Harrisburg that was supported by CPA and did have some black bloc in it.
Mm.
And so we were also, you know, that's the other side of this coin, is not only how do we reach out to white working class people, but how do we reach out to those working class communities of color, the people who not only would be our allies, but also desperately need our protection. You know, and I think that they are feeling very, I think that they're under so much pressure right now that it's difficult for them to form a cohesive response. And I think that showing up and being allies with communities of color right now is the best thing that an Antifa group could do to kind of give them the support that they need to start standing up and making decisions for themselves and their communities. Because right now, I think they feel a little paralyzed by the violence that's being brought down on their heads. So I definitely think that there's a place not only for Antifa in the white working class movements and to kind of try to even stimulate a white working class movement, but I think we can also build a partnership with an ally with black working class movements as well. And I think that's something that has been attempted before and was always beginning to be successful before it got squashed. So I'm hoping that the current political climate is one in which it won't, the prairie fire will be too hot to put out, you know. I really see us in a pivotal moment here as far as the rise of fascism, the rise of predatory capitalism, and the rise of the police state. I mean, it's all coming together in this kind of perfect storm, and I think that Antifa can really work to be those people that lead the charge against that tide.
Well, let's talk about November the 5th, starting now. How did you all find out about this, that November the 5th was going to happen in Harrisburg, the state capital of Pennsylvania? Just talk about who's going to be there and why are they showing up to have a rally?
Well, we found it because we troll Stormfront. So we found it there. They had it posted right out in the open. Then we went to the Harrisburg State Government website to verify that the event was booked. And lo and behold, yes it is.
There's also a wedding that day inside the Capitol. So I think that's probably not going to go as well as the bride might have wished it. Unfortunately. I wouldn't want to get married with a bunch of Nazis right outside.
But anyhow, that's how we found it. It was happenstance. I was sitting next to a friend of mine, and he was trolling Stormfront, and he was like, oh crap, look at this. The NSM's having a huge rally right here on the Capitol steps, and I was like, what? And he showed me, and I was like, wow, and we looked into it as far as, like, legitimacy. Do they have a permit and everything? And yes, they do, and it's happening. So that's how we found it.
Did they stay on, and just for those that don't know, Stormfront is, like, a really popular white supremacist website. It's like an open message board, and they have a section of the forum called, like, events and protests or something like that, and you can go on there and basically find out kind of what big events are going on near you, hopefully, and it's a good resource to kind of troll, like you said, but did they say online that they were going to be at the state capitol, or they just had a date?
They said online that they would be at the state capitol on November the 5th, and they explained in their initial post that they chose the state capitol of Harrisburg because it was a historical center of government. And they chose November the 5th because it was right before the election. So they are definitely trying to make a very obvious political statement with their choice of date and location.
And
they're also talking about the event in their podcasts, and they're already aware of our organizing. And a lot of their podcast discussion has been a lot of them feeling real sad that we're going to be there.
Yeah, you know,
you can tell they're worried.
I mean, one of the things that got me that I always find really interesting is, I saw somebody on, I think, the event page that was said, like, they're just a bunch of rich kids or whatever, like, don't worry about them. And, like, I don't know, I think that they are so blinded to kind of the class dynamics that are within our movement, but also, like, within theirs, because, you know, our position has always been, like, if you look at the leadership of a lot of these groups, like, Heimbach comes from, like, one of the most wealthy suburbs of Washington, D.C., Poolsville. Craig Cobb was, you know, from a very wealthy family. You know, even people like William Pierce was, like, you know, a physicist that famously drove through a wildcat strike at his plant, you know, like...
Yep.
You know, these are, you know, so much of the leadership of that movement is, you know, from, like, upper middle class or even upper class positions. And they kind of, like, in my opinion, kind of lording over these people that are just kind of looking for somebody to kind of tell them what to do. And I just find it interesting that there's always this kind of knee-jerk reaction to them to be like, oh, just a bunch of college kids or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, college kids that never had a job and they don't know anything about what are they talking about class? They don't know anything about class. And,
right.
Yeah. I think we probably read the same angry letter because I know what you're talking about.
We monitor the podcast. We monitor Tradworker website. We monitor Stormfront. So we try to kind of keep our fingers on the pulse of what they're doing. You know, obviously it helps us have a faster response when they're planning something like this. But I think that, you know, as far as their leadership being upper middle class, it's definitely true. I think that that's, again, goes back to our, you know, our organizing and trying to teach ideas of class consciousness to the white working class. Because they've been fooled into thinking that everybody's middle class their whole lives. You know, if you have a TV and a refrigerator, you're fucking rich. So I think that they're kind of hoodwinked into believing these things about self-ownership and class and wealth that are really not true. So I think the Antifa's best action there would be to kind of take the veil off of their eyes in that sense. And I definitely think that, you know, showing up to the Capitol steps on November the 5th is going to be huge for that, because we've seen NSM, they showed up recently in a rural town in Pennsylvania.
Cowdersport.
Yeah, Cowdersport. And there were 9 of them and 50 anti-racists.
And where was this at?
So even in these small towns, they're getting a lot of pushback at this point.
Where was there only 9 of them?
I think it's Cowdersport or Cootersport,
it's
Pennsylvania.
Cowdersport.
And that was recently?
Not really familiar with the pronunciation. I've never been there.
Yeah, I think it's in, like,
town.
North Central Pennsylvania.
Here's the thing. They showed up and had an event there, NSM, and lo and behold, now the whole town is being plagued with being flared by the KKK now.
Hmm.
So it just goes to show you that when you let these people show up in your towns and, you know, rah, 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 and recruit people and get people's dander up, so to speak, next thing you know, you have KKK flyers attached to your door instead of, like, vote for Hillary or vote for Trump. So, I don't know. I think it's... I think people don't understand that, like, you can't allow this shit to just go on unopposed. You can't.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And can you just talk about what is the NSM, and you said they want to do this right before the election. What do you think they want to get out of this? Because I think some people listening may have no idea what the NSM is exactly.
The National... They stand for the National Socialist Movement. So they're like traditional Nazis, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, they're like actual Nazis.
Yeah, like...
They have a swastika on their flag.
Yeah, black shirts, swastika armbands. They believe in, like, basically, like, you know, the Third Reich style Nazism. What was your other point? I'm sorry.
Just what do you think they want to get out of this rally? Like, what's their point?
What do I think? Well, I mean, A, they just want to shit disturb. Two, I think they're trying to capitalize on the whole Trump hysteria. It's very popular to be anti-Black Lives Matter, pro-police state, anti-immigration. Are three big things that, like, especially working class white people are really finding solidarity and uniting over these three things. And I think the NSM and KU, KSS, KKK, whoever, all white supremacist groups around this country, I think are rallying around how easy it is to recruit people into their, like, hate, that their message of hate. It's so easy to, like, funnel people into it over those three issues.
Pennsylvania right now is a hotbed of right-wing organizing. There's a pretty significant 3% Patriot population here. There are quite a few, like, sovereign citizens. So there's a lot of these groups that are already leaning right libertarian that only need to be gently pushed into nationalism, into pure white nationalism. You know, there is a huge amount of support for, you know, the Bundy invasion of Malheur in Oregon.
That's big out here, believe it or not.
Public lamenting when Lavoie Finicum was killed by the FBI, from the same people who would tell black people to just get over it, you know? So there's a lot of this anti-government, libertarian white sentiment that's already boiling here in Pennsylvania. And I think that one of the things the NSM wants to do is use that momentum to build their white nationalist movement.
Yeah.
It's not hard to convince these people that refugees are coming from Syria to poison them. You know, you heard of Donald Trump's vice president and his stupid bowl of Skittles analogy. I heard that last year from a patriot at an anti-immigrant rally.
A patriot
from an anti-immigration rally that we counter-protested last year in Reading. So, I mean, those exact words, if you had a bowl of Skittles and you knew 10 of them were poisoned, would you eat them anyway? Word for word. So this is the kind of rhetoric that's already going around in the mainstream. And I think it's not that far for the NSM to kind of draw people into their specific political movement and make themselves stronger through that kind of already existent rhetoric.
Agreed.
And I just think it's insane about the NSM because it's like, I don't know, I feel like 10 years...
Kick your ass 75 years ago?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, I feel like 10 years ago, a lot of the people on the far right would have looked at them and been like, man, what a joke. Like, for those that don't know, they literally dress up in, like, brown shirts and, like, khaki pants. They have a swastika armband. But it's like the NSM now is like working with Heimbach to like draft all these different documents about creating the, you know.
They're on college campuses now.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Matt Heimbach also met with the Golden Dawn in Greece when he was on his honeymoon. So he is like an actual fascist. Like he wants to organize politically to bring about political fascism to this country.
Yeah, I guess my point about the NSM is I just find it interesting.
Yeah, he's not just mad at people of color.
Yeah, what I was gonna say about the NSM, I just find it interesting that like there's they're still like a big player now, and people are still fucking with them, basically. Like, people are still trying to organize with them. I think because mostly they just have a big network of people across the U.S., it seems like.
Well, and I think as much as social media assisted us in building our Antifa network, I think social media also assists the alt-right in their rise. I think that this whole broad spectrum of alt-rightism that is quite a lot based in the internet, you know, you have young people who spend all their days on Reddit, you know, the poll subthreads, you have people who spend all their days listening to rhetoric. Those people now come together and do, you know, real life actions. We saw one of the most prominent MRA members try to set up anti-woman rallies all over the city last year, all over the country, in different cities last year. So I think you see, a lot of disparate groups that all advocate for the same kind of a strictly structured, very exclusive separatist nationalist mindsets from their own individual points of view are now also able to come together and form a more cohesive nationalist movement, a national socialist movement.
Well, what would you say to people that would say, well, you know what, like, yeah, the NSM sucks, but, you know, they're just a bunch of Hollywood Nazis, they just want to play dress up, like, you know, we got bigger issues going on. I don't need to go out and, like, tell a bunch of Nazis they suck. Like, why should I go to Harrisburg on November 5th? What would you say to them?
Well, honestly, firstly, telling Nazis that they suck is just fun. But from a broader sense, I think that now more than ever, now that we have a presidential candidate who's openly espousing fascist views, KSS came out to do security for Donald Trump's rally during the primaries in Harrisburg.
That was right here in Harrisburg.
That was right here in Harrisburg as well at the Farm Show Complex. He had a rally here that had all the traffic in the city completely snarled for hours, and he had Keystone State skinheads, neo-Nazis in their flight jackets standing by the doors running security. So, I mean, we really see this political mainstream blessing of white nationalist, white supremacist, national socialist, fascist views. And I think that having a scale of badness and only choosing to react to that which we think is really ultimately the worst, to the point that all of that other badness that we're choosing not to respond to is just going to seep into the collective unconscious, and it's just going to fuel the fire that's already burning. You know, we already have people who are listening to Trump's speeches and being like, yeah, build that wall. You got to step up every chance you get, no matter who it is, whether it's a coworker, whether it's the National Socialist Movement, whether it's Matt Heimbach, you know, whether it's Keystone State skinheads. You can't pick and choose. The only time you should choose is if it's something that you really just are not capable of handling. I think that it's really important to put everything you have into no platform, because otherwise it's not going to work. You can't half-ass no platform. It's no fucking platform.
Not to mention, every time these people show their faces, like Trad Worker, KSS, NSM, whoever it may be, the Klan, if enough of us show up and make it such a pain in the fucking ass for local police, local, like, just everybody to deal with, if we make it such a pain in the ass, what happens is they're not allowed to come back. And I think one of the best things we can do is eliminate public spaces from allowing them to spread their message by, if we gotta cause hell, we cause hell, and then they don't come back. I noticed, like, there's a lot of articles on the internet about Trad Worker. Ever since Sacramento, the Battle of Sacramento, as it's called, Trad Worker Party now can't find anywhere that will let them host an event. Nowhere, they always get declined because of Sacramento. So it's like, the bigger the stink we make, whether we win because, like, you know what I'm trying to say. Help me out here.
I think what Elle is trying to say is that the less spaces that we give them in public, the less comfortable they're going to feel coming out in public.
They'll get barred from showing up to places. Whether those places are barring them for the right reasons or not, the bottom line is they've been barred.
Well, and I also think, like, in the case of that club in Brooklyn that was holding the White Power Punk Rock Night, that club has been shut down. Like, literally, those bars had to close. The backlash was so significant from New York City Antifa and affiliated groups that that woman had to close her bar because she chose to facilitate a White Power Punk Rock Night. I think that if you set it up so that people realize that it's really not good for their businesses, it's really not good for the public spaces that they're trying to hold these things in, I think you really start to turn the sentiment against, well, here's the common element here. It's Matt Heimbach. This is the common element here. It's those fucking Nazis.
Well, okay, so the other side of the coin, what would you say to somebody that said, well, yeah, that all sounds great, but I saw what happened in Sacramento and I don't really want to get stabbed. Like, you know, I don't want to put myself in a situation that possibly something might happen that could be violent. What would you say to them?
For our event specifically, we're doing the best we can to create a culture of safety and communication amongst everybody who shows up. There's going to be medics. There's going to be legal observers from the National Lawyers Guild.
We put in the request for that already.
Yes. We're going to have strength in numbers. I'm hoping it's looking like we're going to. We're going to have at least two certified EMTs there. But I actually doubt violence is going to happen like Sacramento. I don't think the police in Harrisburg, I mean, I live there. I don't think the police in Harrisburg are going to be as hands-off as they were in Sacramento. That seemed almost like an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised how hands-off they were. Most events like this, the police keep you separated. So I highly doubt there's going to be any violence, unless somebody shows up and is determined to find violence. Then obviously, yes, there will be, but I don't see it going that route, and we're not advocating it for it to be some kind of free-for-all street battle either. So, like we don't want to see anyone get hurt. I don't want to see anyone get arrested.
Yeah.
All of our actions thus far have been zero arrests, zero injuries, and we'd like to keep it that way.
Yeah.
You know, we're definitely, as Elle said, we're promoting a culture of safety. We are asking everyone, you know, to be as aware as they can, to have comrades. Like he said, we'll have medics clearly labeled. We have the National Lawyers Guild coming out. So I think that we have set up an event that will definitely be confrontational without spilling over into violent confrontation, you know.
But that being said, if trouble does arise, you know, then it'll be handled.
Because the goal is to shut them down, right? To not allow them to have a rally, correct?
Correct.
Absolutely.
We want to completely ruin their rally.
We intend to drown them out. We intend to block their view. We intend to provide a very strong and vocal presence directly in front of their faces. We will be assisted by a more liberal group of individuals across the street who we believe intend to bring drums, cans, barrels, anything they can bang on and make noise. So we're definitely going to have, you know, kind of a chorus of noise disruption, which I think is great. We also have another more liberal group that's going to be holding a separate event several miles away in another part of the city. I think that's going to draw some people that maybe really aren't as willing to get into a face-to-face confrontation with these people. So in a way, I kind of think that will be beneficial because that's where they want all the kids to go, and that's where they want, you know, all the families to go. And I think that that's probably best, not because we're expecting anything to happen, but because we feel like maybe going to water down our message in ways that would possibly bring, you know, some inconsistencies.
Yeah, I've just seen that over the years. You know, there's always some liberal group that's like, oh, there's going to be a big rowdy protest. Let's do a demonstration 3 miles away, you know. Classic.
I saw you smirk.
Yeah.
I saw you laugh.
They're planning a unity rally, and it seems like it's going to be a lot of fun, but I'm going to be busy yelling at Nazis in their faces, so yeah. I can't attend.
I mean, I feel the real push for that is something much more insidious, is that they just don't want people to get crazy, and they don't want people to fight back, and they're going to, you know, they'll call it a unity. I feel like it's always called a unity rally, these things.
It's always called a unity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of those people myself.
I think that goes back to the realization that a lot of human beings just really don't like change and disruption to their routine.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Okay, well, go ahead.
There's always people that don't have to worry about fascists, too, though, that want to have the unity rallies.
Yeah, you know, it's always so transparent. You know, it's local business leaders, local clergy, local nonprofits, yep. You know, everybody that has a stake in, like, being, you know, some community representative or leader and telling other people what to do. And they're the ones, either they're the ones pushing to be up there, or somebody else is pushing them to be up there to get people to come on board. And I don't know. I mean, we'll see. It'll be interesting, because I think at this point, like you said, the stakes are high, and I think people know what time it is, and they're going to probably, if they can, show up and try to shut this shit down, hopefully. Well, is there anything else you want to say about September 5th? Where should people go if they want more information? Who should they contact? And what things should they do to prepare for November 5th? Because it is coming up in about a month.
Yes.
Well, we are most accessible on our Facebook page. That's where a lot of us interact and where we are usually contacted. You're welcome to send our Facebook page a message. Just search for Soroki Antifa on Facebook, and we should pop right up for you. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Central PA Antifa on Twitter. We have a website, www.centralpa.com. I actually don't know the website. I'm sorry. It's on our Facebook page.
What about our Rise Up?
You can email us at centralpaantifa@riseup.net. We do check that less frequently than we check our Facebook messages, because Rise Up doesn't give us phone notifications. But we do check that, so you're welcome to reach out to us there as well. As far as if you're in the region and you want to come out, the Nazi rally starts on the steps of the Capitol building, which is on the 3rd Street side of the Capitol building. The Nazis show up at 2 p.m.
We're organizing
around 1 o'clock.
Noon or 1 o'clock.
We're trying to organize down the street. We will have more details about meeting points up on our Facebook, Twitter, and website. Or you can always contact us for details if you'd like to come out.
We're going to post on Facebook as we get closer to the event. We're going to post up a staging area, probably more than one staging areas for people to meet up at. Is that okay if we don't name them here?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, mostly we just want people that are listening. They're like, oh yeah, I really want to come out, but I don't know who to contact, or, you know, especially people that might not be crewed up with a group of people, but they want to show up. Like, how can they participate but still feel safe and that they're going to be around comrades?
Like our page on Facebook, shoot us a Facebook message. We always respond to Facebook messages.
Yeah, we respond within a day, sometimes immediately, even if you get us at the right time.
Right.
We're also open to helping to arrange carpools. If you're in the region, you're not sure if you can make it, you want to see if you can get somebody to help you out with gas money, we're more than happy to try to facilitate, you know, separate groups meeting up. You know, if you're in Baltimore and you see somebody from D.C. and you think maybe they can swoop you, definitely get a hold of us. We'll get a hold of them and see if we can get you guys together, that kind of thing. So, you know, we have crews coming in from all over the region. We are certainly more than happy to help coordinate more people as they want to come in. They can just shoot us a Facebook message. Definitely like us on Facebook, and you'll get all the updates to this event.
Great. And there also is, like, a specific Facebook event. I think it already has over 100 people that say they're going. I was just, you know, one last question in closing out. In doing this, do you feel that there's anything that the anti-fascist or more broadly anarchist groups or whatever could be doing to better network for these type of situations? You know, where are we weak right now in these types of mobilizations? Do you feel that we could be actually actively engaging in a much better way?
Honestly, I think that our biggest weakness right now is that we're all so damn busy. I think it's really difficult to coordinate the meeting of large groups of people until it's something of significance, like the November 5th event. And I think that we could probably leverage social media more efficiently to make it easier to coordinate. I definitely don't see it as a hurdle that we can't overcome, but I definitely see it as a problem when we're trying to put these meetings together with like two or three regional groups and everyone's like, I work every Friday night and, you know, yeah. I work every Monday through Friday, or I'm home with my kids this weekend, or, you know, and I'm not trying to say that's I'm home every weekend as well, so makes it difficult for us to do that. So I think that, again, social media is probably the best remedy to the difficulty in getting lots of disparate groups of people together on the same timeline. What are your thoughts, Al?
That motherfucking wage slavery.
Yeah.
Fucks everything up.
Well, I thought we were all just rich kids. We just have to finish our term papers and then, you know, we'll all be okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Or maybe that's Identity Europa.
I'm not home every weekend. Right, I'm out on my yacht. I forgot.
Remember that article? He said, did these people, I bet they've never had a job.
Never had a job. Yeah, fuck
right.
You.
They let you do that. They let you do that here in America. They let you not have a job.
Yeah.
Is there anything you all want to say in closing? This has been a great conversation. We covered a lot of great ground. I really am glad that you all are out there. I really encourage everybody to go out on the 5th, and obviously it's going down. We'll do everything we can to help build for November 5th. Anything you want to say in closing?
I did want to say thank you to your group. Thank you so much for helping, reaching out to us and helping us out here.
Yeah, we really appreciate the support. It's been an immense help, and we really appreciate you helping us get the word out. We'd like to see a great crowd come out on November the 5th. We want to drown them out. We want to make sure they know that they are not welcome in Pennsylvania. They don't represent the interests of Pennsylvanians, and they don't belong on the Capitol steps.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll have to have you on again. This has been great.
Thank you. Yes, please let us know.
Yeah, anytime. Seriously, thank you so much.
And we'll make sure to send you our report back first thing.
Great. All right. Take care.
We say goodbye at the beginning of the night, when the rest of this little town will turn off their bedroom lights. We say goodbye before we hit the road, because the paths we take are not the ones that everybody knows. We say goodbye with this fear in our hearts about the people who will do their best to tear our worlds apart. We say goodbye not knowing the next time we will meet, and if there's a chance that we will be alive, 'cause we don't know how far they will go with us this time. So let's tell each other that we love them whenever we can. Let's keep each other as safe as we possibly can. Be careful, keep quiet, most important of all, don't push the ones you love far enough for them to fall. 'Cause when we fall, we can't stick together. We have to stick together. We have secrets, we have treasures, we have our plans, but they can never be measured by the ways of consequence. 'Cause we can't be sure how fucked up the state decides to react. So we burn notes, encrypt our messages, and find it hard to trust every single person that we are desperate to love. 'Cause those outside our circles are always the enemy to us. have to stick together. I see the cut you deep into your very existence. If you need to take some time, if you need to get away, we can all work together to find somewhere warm and try to stay. This will never be safe, this will never be easy. We will need to call our parents to let them know we're still breathing. But if we hold each other near every step of the way, then maybe it'll be better, maybe it'll be better. So let's tell each other that we love them whenever we can. Let's keep each other safe as we possibly can. Be careful, keep quiet, most important of all, don't push the ones you love far enough for them to fall. Cause when we fall, we can't stick together. We have to stick together.
All right, you made it once again to the very end. Thanks so much for listening. Again, very quickly, if you can't support us online, please go to itsgoingdown.org, click the donate button. We really need people to sign up to become a monthly sustainer. Every month, give us something. $1, $5, $10, $20, $100, it doesn't matter. Anything you can send our way to help us sustain our work really helps us. If you can sign up every month to give us something, all you need to do is go online, click a few buttons, sign up every month. It'll come out of your debit or credit account or PayPal account. It really helps out. Or send us something on Bitcoin. Last thing I want to put out there is if you want to come on this show, if you have a project, if you want to talk about something, if you have something going down in your city, your town, your trailer park, your reservation, your hood, doesn't matter. If you got something happening, if you want to hit us up, it's info@itsgoingdown.org. Give us a shout out. Let us know what's happening, and we'll talk to you then.